All right. Now that we've done that. Hello, everyone, and welcome to I've Gotta Beat Mortal Kombat Annihilation, a podcast within a podcast about my one-year journey to defeat this awful movie, Mortal Kombat Annihilation from 1997. Today was day 202 of my journey to watch this movie every day for a year and an extra special occasion. Tonight, I did not have to watch it alone. Tonight, I had with me to enjoy... I guess enjoy is an okay word to use in this
game. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Tonight, I had with me special guest in from out of town, all the way from New York, by way of Boston. Good friend and former previous returning champion guest on the show, Randall Trang.
Hi. I enjoyed it. I had fun.
Yeah, no, this movie is way more enjoyable if you can watch it with people. But... Yeah, just watching it by yourself every night is a harrowing ordeal. But I think even with people, after a certain number of times, it's going to start, you know, it's going to start wearing on you. All the questions just add up, pile up on
top. If only you could have 365 friends and to watch a different one with you. Every day you have a different friend with you.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be grand to have 365 friends?
They won't be your friends by the end of it.
Yeah. Well, they all only have to watch it once. So
it might be enough.
Yeah, it might. But anyway, so we just got done watching the movie. And now we're going to do the thing that happens sometimes when I watch this movie, is talk about it with somebody. Now, this was a movie. Now, I know you had seen this before.
Yes, multiple times.
Multiple times. How many times do you think you've seen this
movie? Less than 365.
Do you think you've seen it more than 10 times?
I think I have seen it maybe half a dozen times, so I'll say like six.
Okay.
Yeah.
Six is generally defined as half a dozen, yep. So I appreciate you sticking to the layman's.
Just in case people didn't know.
Yeah.
Or they're bad at math. That's a lot of times, by the way.
Six times?
Six is a lot of times.
Yeah. No, three times was enough. You know,
it shows you how much I like Mortal Kombat as a franchise, even though and this might be like a hot take, but I think the video games are mostly hot garbage.
Yeah.
Well, not really. Like compared to like Street Fighter, I think it's really bad.
Lots of games are kind of crappy in comparison to Street Fighter.
Yeah, well, it's the ultimate fighting game. Like my brother and I growing up, we played a lot of video games, and the one that we played the absolute most was Street Fighter. We played every iteration of Street Fighter, and we still play it to this day, where like a new Street Fighter comes out, it was like, I'm coming over. Even though I live in New York and he lives in Boston. I'm coming over to play this Street Fighter game.
I'll be there in 4 hours.
Yeah. And then like Mortal Kombat was just because, like, okay, we need something to play when we are not playing Street Fighter.
Yeah.
And we had to play video games that were two-player.
So we don't completely burn ourselves out on Street Fighter.
Right. Or, you know, destroy the cartridge because we play it so much.
Overheat the cartridge.
So, like, we got Mortal Kombat, Mortal Kombat 2, Mortal Kombat 3. We got all the ones on, like, Super Nintendo. And then we switched over to when we switched over to PlayStation, we played the Mortal Kombat trilogy, which was like a game by itself that like combined all the Mortal Kombats.
Yeah.
That was super fun because you could do like 5-on-5.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's like a team match where like if one person gets defeated, then like the next person jumps in. And like we had so much fun playing fighting games, and Mortal Kombat was just one of them that they made a lot of Mortal Kombat games. So naturally we played Mortal Kombat a lot, but I don't think that the games were really that any good.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think that all of the games basically after 3 mm-hmm. were like a big part of the, you know, the franchise even continuing is all like leftover goodwill from the early games.
Yeah, well, it was like the reason it got that much popularity in the first place was because of like the shock factor of all the gore and stuff like that, and it rode that for a while.
Yeah,
I'd say like the first game, first Mortal Kombat game.
It seemed like they were like, how can we really wild this out for that? What was it, Mortal Kombat X?
Yeah,
which was the 10th one,
right?
And some of the I still haven't played. And I don't want to. I don't know if I've. I can't remember if I've said this on the show or not. I've said it to you, and I've said it to other people, but it's like. I'm not like that. After the first or second one, I was like, Yeah, Street Fighter is more my thing. Like, yeah. I liked those first two Mortal Kombats because it was like that shock of like, this is so different
right.
from any other fighting game I've played. You know,
it's all about the fatality.
Like, well, yeah.
It's all about getting
And the
there.
Fact that it's like the characters, you know, were that like sort of that digitized, the sprites sort of looked like real people.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of thing. What was that other game? Pit Fighter? That also
they're just real people kind of like just thrown into the game that they record them doing all the motions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's actually like the guy that was Liu Kang in Mortal Kombat 2 was one of the actors I really liked in, WMAC. Remember that show? It was like
WMAC.
Yeah. It was like a pro wrestling show, except it was with martial artists. It was like,
I don't feel like I've ever heard of this.
Oh man, it's awesome. And this ties into Mortal Kombat completely.
Oh, okay.
Because one of the, like, it was a show that was on Saturday mornings.
Right.
For kids. And it was like, you know, it like aired in the same block as all like the cartoons and stuff like that. And it was a martial arts show and like had all these characters that were martial arts competitors.
Yeah.
But the show itself was supposed to be, it was about this competition. It wasn't a real life competition. It was a complete, everything was written and it was a storyline thing. And they got a bunch of martial artists and martial arts actors and stuntmen basically to be on the show. And they all play these different characters. And the show was about the fights, but it was also about kind of like their interpersonal relationships, like between the fights, like, you know, basically there was an arena where they had to fight to gain points. And then, the points would go towards, this championship.
Yeah.
And they were fighting for this fictional championship. It's like, it's exactly like wrestling where it's like, they're trying to win this championship, but also the show is about like what goes on between the fights,
the stories of the fights,
right? All the fighters and like all their backstories. And
I can't believe I've never heard of it. What does WMAC stand for?
It's like the World Martial Arts Championship or something like that.
That makes sense.
It's something like that. And then, there's something that comes after it. It's called, let me see. I'm going to look it up real quick.
Okay.
WMAC Masters. That's what it's called.
WMAC Masters. I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
It ran for like 2 seasons.
It definitely sounds like completely up my alley. I mean, when was it on?
It was on like, let me see. It was, oh yeah, I forgot. The host of the show was Shannon Lee, who is Bruce Lee's daughter. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. She hosts the show and then like she would start the show and then like the episode would start. Ran from 1995 to 1997.
Wow.
It was shot in Universal Studios, Florida.
Okay.
So it was one of those shows.
Are you looking at the Wikipedia for it right now? Does it say if it was a syndicated show?
I think it was.
Okay, because if it was a syndicated show, then that means there's a chance, like, none of the market, just no one here picked it up.
That's absolutely true.
Man, which that's a bummer.
UPN, it was like on the kids block, and then it went to the CW.
Huh.
Yeah. It was only 26 episodes, but it's 2 seasons.
Yeah, man.
And yeah, it had like...
This sounds awesome. If anybody else out there remembers the show, please write in, let us know.
But they had legit like martial artists and stuff like that, like competitors that became stuntmen. And then
right.
like, they would become characters on that show and they would show off their acting chops, acting in quotation marks.
Yeah.
There were a couple people that had Mortal Kombat ties in that show because one of the guys did the animations for Liu Kang in Mortal Kombat 2. He was actually one of the guys on the show. And he was one of my favorite ones because I could you could recognize him. And they kind of promoted the fact that he was Liu Kang. And it was heavily influenced by like Mortal Kombat.
Yeah. Were the characters done like sort of more like normal people, like, or was it more kind of built up as characters? Sort of more over the top, like in wrestling or Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter.
I think in the first season, they were more straight martial artists. And then in the second season, they had like more kind of like mystical powers or something like that. And there was another guy, and I remember him really distinctly because his name was Hakim the Machine. And that was like his real name. Well, the machine part wasn't his real name. Hakim was his real name.
Mr. and Mrs. the Machine.
Hakim was his real name.
Yeah.
And his nickname when he was competing in like karate and taekwondo and stuff like that, like he was an actual like competitor and he was like a champion. He's like this big, tall, lanky dude. and super athletic. And so naturally he became a stuntman. And his nickname when he was fighting was Hakim the Machine.
Right.
And like they turned that into like his gimmick on WBC.
Where he was a robot.
And where he was a robot. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
He had like cybernetic enhancements. And it's like, that's why they call me the Machine. And I remember him because he was just like, he was super athletic. He was ripped to the gills.
Yeah.
And like, he was in the very first episode. I remember I like watched it. I watched the first episode again. It's on like YouTube. You can like find it on YouTube. And like someone uploaded all the episodes and like Hakim, I think is
got my weekend plans. I guess
I think he's in the very first
26 episodes to this.
Yeah, you kind of like get introduced to everyone that's in the first season in that first episode. So like you'll get the drift. You'll catch the drift in the first 10 minutes.
I'll see if I need to keep watching.
Yeah,
would you recommend it?
I would. It's really entertaining. There's like the thing I remember.
Do you think it is more or a better or worse suggestion after watching Mortal Kombat Annihilation than Saving Private Ryan?
it would be a better version of Mortal Kombat. So okay. It's a better recommendation.
When we got done watching Mortal Kombat tonight on Netflix, or Mortal Kombat Annihilation, it brought up the Netflix thing of like, you may also like, and the first suggestion was Saving Private Ryan. I'm like, wait, what? What you're talking about, it's like, yeah, if you liked this awful movie, you're an idiot. Watch this good movie instead.
That has nothing to do thematically with this movie.
They, the guys in the war, kind of a family, maybe.
It's a real war.
Yes. Yeah.
This really happened.
Yeah. Yeah, so that now that we've fallen down this WMAC, well, the thing that threw me off on that at first, too, is because when you said WMAC, I was thinking of the local NBC station here is WMC.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wait, was this something with the Channel 5? I don't understand. Like, no. Anyway.
Just a really good show. I remember distinctly there was a cage style fight that you could have. I think this was actually like the default type of fight, like style of fight, where like there's a cage, the electric cage that cages in the fighters, and if you hit the edge, you would get electrocuted.
Of course.
So, like, you know, they would have to act like they were being electrocuted.
Yeah. Whenever they hit the cage. I can't wait. I cannot wait to see this now.
There's also like a pit style fight, you know, where like, you know, the ring is like elevated, and if you go out of bounds, you fall into a pit.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
This sounds great. Were there like, did they put in like, you know, after the fact special effects and stuff like that? Or
I think so. I think I remember that.
All right, guys, look forward to next year's show. I've got to beat WMAC.
It might be more enjoyable.
Yeah. By far. I guess we'll see. I'm really looking forward. Well, when we get done with this, we should find that first episode on YouTube and watch it.
Oh yeah.
And see what we think. when do you think, I mean, I assume you haven't, have you not seen it since then, or have you watched it on YouTube?
I've seen one, like part of one episode, like not too long ago.
And it felt like it was just like you remembered it?
Pretty much. Okay. Yeah. It's a lot of it is like this movie too, Mortal Kombat Annihilation, where it's like, the acting and the storylines are like pretty bad, but then like it gets down to like the action sequences. It's like, oh, these guys are talented.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah. These stuntmen are really talented, and they know how to make things look good.
Well, now I have to ask, are the fight scenes in WMAC better than the fight scenes in Mortal Kombat Annihilation?
You're asking me the thing that I just watched versus something I watched when I was a kid.
Yes.
If I can compare the two.
Yeah.
I think that there's no way Mortal Kombat Annihilation's fight scenes are better than WMAC because WMAC is all legit martial artists.
And not some actors trying their best.
Yeah. It's not James Remar.
Cut every 2 seconds with Ray Park in a wig.
Yeah.
Let me just ask you that. Now, as someone who, and we can maybe get back to some of this other stuff, but as someone who not only is, I mean, and of course, you know, I have been like, just waiting to ask you about some of these things
since we got here. You kept like starting to ask a question. He's like, no, wait. I'm going to ask you.
I mean, even before that, you know, like since I've started doing this, you know, I've been kind of like starting to ask you questions about things or like going, oh, I'll just save it. But I mean, like it's as someone who not only is a master of martial arts, literally. I mean, you have that title, right? That's no, That's not me being funny or
just, yeah, it sounds weird.
Oh, of course.
Saying it out loud.
Yes, it does. But, you know, but being someone who's at the level that you're at, as well as someone who has experience doing, you know, actual like martial arts stuff and stunt work for, you know, for movies and TV stuff. Mm-hmm. The fights in this are bad, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
I mean, it's not just like to the, it's not just to like the average viewer. It's like there's these movies, the fights in this movie are like riddled with problems, even though there are talented, you know, stunt people and like martial artists in it.
I think it speaks to kind of like the movie making process and how everything you see on screen is a culmination of a lot of different people collaborating together to put together a good product.
Right.
And if any one person or any one department really fails, like editors, if they really fail, then they fail everybody. It makes everyone look really bad.
Right.
Because I can tell these stunt people are very talented and that they know what they're doing, but they're constantly getting failed by the direction and the editing and whoever's coordinating the wire work and like, all that stuff. Like you're supposed to like work all together to make everything look really smooth and good.
Yeah.
And you can just tell, it's just like, oh, like this stunt person did the right thing, but then it's edited to make it look like he's doing something completely different.
Yeah.
And like this stunt person was
the person who like was picking the shots didn't know the difference between what would work and what wouldn't.
It's like all the flips that you were pointing out, where it's just like, they asked that stunt man to do that flip and he did it perfectly four different times.
Yeah.
But the way they put it together, they tried to make it look like one smooth motion and they just didn't think to like try to create that continuity. So it just looks absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
Or like the wire work. Like that one backflip that Luke
where
does.
He does that flip and then flies straight up into the air. Yeah.
Like,
it's like up and then whoop. Yeah. You can see the point when it starts kind of like lifting. Oh, I love that part.
I can almost guarantee you that whoever did the wire work was like told that the frame cuts out way below than what it actually cut out.
Yeah.
You know? So he's just like, oh, from this point, I can just pull him straight up.
Yeah.
And then like when it came to the point of editing, they didn't do that.
Well, and also there was a lot of those places where it seemed like the camera was in a really poor place.
Oh yeah.
Or just like who do you, after having seen this, you know, now quite a few times, and knowing what you know, who do you think is most to blame for
director?
Of course, like with a lot of that stuff, you kind of just go like, the buck eventually stops at the director.
Right.
But I mean, do you feel like that's really the cause of the problems here?
I mean, like close second is editor, but like whoever is cutting that, they have to know filmmaking better than that, than to cut at the places that they did. But definitely the director, because you know that, like, to me, the director is supposed to be the one that knows what's going on set at all times, you know? So when it comes to like all the acting and all of the, all the action choreography and things like that, if the director has no idea what order things are supposed to go in, which is clearly what happened in this movie, it all ends up looking really, really bad. and like from my experiences on set of an action movie and like doing the stunts and doing the acting on top of like having to do stunts.
Yeah.
If the director doesn't know what order of like, if he doesn't know where in the movie this is going to go, that really affects your performance. And if there's no one around to tell you like how you're supposed to be feeling or what you're supposed to be doing during this scene, like how, like what order the action of the movie goes in, then it could very easily lead to you making a really bad decision, like performance wise.
Yeah.
So I noticed that when I was acting and I was doing the stunt work, like there were, like, it's really hard. And I tweeted about this. It's really hard to do martial arts, obviously. And it's really hard to act, like super duper hard. To do both of them at the same time is like one of the hardest things I've ever done. Like I had to give a performance while I'm also performing and punching and kicking and making sure I'm not hurting my scene partner and doing all these things. And so the director has to let you know, all right, this, like, he has to kind of like get you into that space of where the story is. It's like, okay, so this is where this is this part of the story and this is how you have to feel. while you're doing the scene. So when you're doing all your punching and kicking and stuff like that, just keep that in mind. And I don't think it's the fault of any of the talent. Like when I was watching this movie, I think it was like the director just clearly didn't tell Sonya like
how to react.
What? Like there's a giant monster behind you and he's like an inch away from eating you.
Yeah.
You have to react very scared. And by the way, the monster looks like this. This is just like, you know, it'll like show Sonya like a production photo or like a production picture of like the monster that's about to eat her.
Just sketch something out on a napkin, man. Yeah. You could get across that this thing is horrifying.
Yeah, but of course he clearly didn't do that because Sonya's reaction in that scene where she's about to get eaten by a monster is just, oh, that's weird.
Yeah. Would it surprise you to learn that this was the first movie he had directed?
No.
was his first movie.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if it was like someone else was directing it. And then halfway through, he was just like, don't put my name on this. And then he left. And then some other guy took over and took over directing credit.
Well, this was his first movie. The director's name is John R. Leonetti. And
sorry, John.
Yeah.
I'm roasting you right now.
This is his first movie, but he has a much longer film credit list before that as like a cinematographer and a director of photography. But you would think with that, now there are a couple scenes, there's some shots in the movie where you're like, this is artfully composed.
Yeah.
This looks, you know, you go, okay, yeah, this kind of looks like you could, that's, why isn't the rest of the movie like this?
Yeah.
And I just, that's part of the thing with this where I'm going like, when you have a movie that's just bad top to bottom, you just go, okay. When you have like a cheap movie that's just bad top to bottom, it's like, okay, these people just didn't know what they're doing.
Right.
And you can just go, okay, this is just a fun, bad movie. When you have a movie that is bad top to bottom, even if it's like they spent a lot of money on it, you can go, okay, this is what it is, you know, blah, blah. But when you've got a movie that has like a good, decent budget, it's from, you know, something that was a very big success. They spend twice as much money as the first movie. You bring back some of the people don't come back, and you go, and then there are parts in it that don't feel like garbage, that look like, okay, someone knew what they were doing here, you know, and whether it's in the fights or, but like throughout the movie, like sprinkled in, there's parts where you're going like, okay, that's well done. Look at the lighting on this. This looks nice. This is a good shot. And you just, that's why this movie is so baffling to me. Yeah. You know, it's not just that it's, oh, it's so bad. I can't believe it. It's like, it's bad. And then you're going like, how did you get to this?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it too has to do with the fact that this movie is very, it's very hard to direct because it's also a martial arts film.
Yeah.
And it's
full of not martial artists.
Full of not martial artists. And also there is a lot of CG going on and
CG when they didn't quite understand how to do CG. Apparently.
Right. Like in order to do CG, in order to do fight sequences and action sequences, you can't just be good at directing. You have to be good at directing those specific types of movies.
Well, and you and I talked about this is and this has kind of been like a running question throughout as I've been doing this. And we talked about this a little bit while we were watching, but it's like the fact that this movie cost twice as much to make as the first movie. Most of the actors didn't come back, you know, were replaced by less well-known people, if not basically completely unknown people or like former American gladiators. you've got that. And it's like, and the movie doesn't even look like a movie in comparison to the first one. And like, and you brought up the thing where you said, it's like, oh, this is clearly a, you know, a case of that Hollywood accounting where, you know, where like that money all went
somewhere else.
Yeah. Cause it's definitely not on the screen.
Right. They didn't invest it on the screen. That money went to someone else.
There's someone who got like a second floor added onto their house or something.
Yeah.
Cause it's just, you know, it's flabbergasting.
Yeah. It definitely reads as a ultra low budget film because of the choices that they made in the set, the choices that they made, like to take shortcuts on CGI and things like that. I don't like that part of the mystery will remain a mystery forever.
Until we talk to someone that worked on this movie.
Yeah. And they clearly cut corners on like the cast and crew too, because the solution to having you know, like there's a lot of moving parts to this movie. Again, it's like an action movie. It's a kung fu movie. It's a it's a CG heavy movie. And then there's like there's supposed to be parts of it where it has like some heavy dramatic like family drama action going on. Yeah. And like, you know, there are parts of it that are very much like they're trying to like throw all of this plot at you and they have to explain it to you. And there's a lot going on in the movie. And the solution to not being good at, you know, action choreography or action directing and CG directing and stuff like that is to have a second team, to have people that know how to do that help you.
Yeah.
And it's clear just from watching the movie, but also from looking at the credits after the movie ended, that they didn't do that.
Yeah.
Like they had like no crew on this. Like just, that's why I stopped the fight choreography.
Yeah, during just like in the middle of the credits, all of a sudden Randy stopped it. It was like, wait, hold on, what? And like ran it back. And yeah. If you want to explain your reaction.
Yeah, I was like, the fight team is like four people big, which is nothing. And the fight choreographer is Robin Shu, who plays Liu Kang and is not a fight choreographer. His only two fight choreography credits are in Mortal Kombat 1, where he did, you know, some of them with the help of like four other fight choreographers.
Right.
And in like this movie.
This was literally, it was him and there was like an assistant to him.
Right.
And that was it on fight choreography.
It's amazing. I'm like, this, really? Like,
which I mean, I guess maybe
they couldn't get someone else. Like, it makes sense because it shows. Like, it's not a good martial arts movie.
Are there any? Would you say that any of the fights in there hold up as like okay?
Oh yeah, fights? Yeah. There's definitely really good parts in there, and like,
well, yeah. I mean, there's parts where, and you know, there's kind of some stuff to like in most of the fights. Maybe there's at least a thing or two.
Yeah, there's good stuff in there. I think Robin Shu, he's an experienced martial artist, not as experienced as some of the other guys on that in that movie, but I think generally speaking, the fight scene, and you pointed this out too, the fight scene between Cyrax and all those goons versus Jax and Sonya in that laboratory, that's pretty good. Like, it looks pretty good. It doesn't make any dang sense that Cyrax the robot knows Taekwondo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was my first question to Randy when that happened. I was like, if you're going to build a robot, why are you going to teach it martial arts? Like, just, it's a robot.
He has like bombs and stuff coming out of his body. And
he's got bombs and like acid nets that turn you into a skeleton.
Yeah.
It's like, he should just be like the Terminator.
But he's really good at throwing roundhouse kicks.
Good at flipping around and kicking and jumping and kicking when it's not even necessary. It's like, how do you, unless it's supposed to be, and I'm sure someone will correct me, because that's one of the things I was going to talk about earlier, was it's just like, I don't know much about Mortal Kombat, because it's like, if I had been doing this about, if on that first night, if instead of Mortal Kombat Annihilation, if Netflix had instead had the Street Fighter movie with Roxy's trying to get on the show again.
Hi, Roxy.
She's making a beeline. She meowed and then made a beeline straight for us. you little jerk. You know, if it had been that, was it 94 Street Fighter? The one with Raul Julia and Jean-Claude Van Damme. If it had been that instead, I would feel so much more equipped to talk about like, oh, this is what's right. This is where they change things. But it's like, I know so little about the Mortal Kombat games. Other than like, oh, it was fun to make, to beat it, that it was so over the top bloody in those, you know, in those opening games.
That's the thing too, is that well, let me finish on like the fight scenes. Like, I think that the fight scenes with Cyrax and the goons, which, you know, all the goons are clearly stuntmen that are trained in martial arts.
Who take one hit and then are done.
But they are so good at making sure the movements work. Like, there's a certain rhythm to a fight scene, and these guys clearly get it.
And they sell all of those, everything from Sonya.
Oh,
fantastic.
They look great. They make her look like $1 million.
Yeah.
And like, her stunt double obviously makes her look great too. But that scene, I think, works really well as a fight scene. And the other one I really liked, even though it was very brief, was Scorpion and Sub-Zero.
Yeah. I could tell you liked that one.
Yeah, that one was really good. And like, the both of them are clearly, they
let two actual
trained martial artists. Yeah. And Sub-Zero, who's actually Reptile in the first one.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, that was one of the little bits of trivia I've learned, was that like, he got promoted for coming back to this one from being just like a guy in a mask to he got to do a fight with the mask off. So you can see that it's really him.
Say some lines.
Yeah. Ooh, line. And I get to do this thing. And I was miming Sub-Zero's little ice move.
Ice ball.
So I say little ice move. He makes a whole huge bridge. So, I mean, I should not be like denigrating that.
Yeah. But yeah, that scene, that the Scorpion Sub-Zero fight scene works well because of the talent involved.
Right.
It's not so much the direction or the choreography or anything like
that. You can tell that the stuff that's going on, even in the places where it's shot bad, you can tell they still know what they're doing.
Right. Yeah. You can't possibly make them look that bad because they are that good. You
know? Yeah. Well, there is that. But again, this is a problem with like the Wire thing when they do that one move where it's like, how is that even at all?
See, that's possible? Why I don't blame the talent, because even the good, the ones that are good at that stuff, they look bad. So it clearly can't be the talent's fault. You know, I can't blame everything.
That makes sense. Yeah. I mean, and see, this is giving me new insight on how to approach the way that I look at some of these different things, which I mean, and watching this with different people and talking to people about it was all, I mean, that was part of my hope for doing this was that I would learn like, oh, maybe through someone else's eyes, it will kind of like unlock a different thing of this, make me think about it a different way. I mean, because, and you see that those two guys are doing stuff when they're not on Wires.
Yep.
They're doing things that are like, oh,
they're good.
That's Well, I mean, that move that you were talking about, like where they, you know, does that like run up kick in the back of the head, like as he's going over.
Yeah, I love that move.
That's awesome. And he just pulled that off.
Yeah. Sub-Zero does this move where he runs up to Scorpion and steps up on his knee, then steps up on his shoulder to jump over him. And as he's jumping over him, kicks him in the back of the head, which is an awesome move.
Well, and that whole little combo of, you know, like, or not combo, you know, that like sort of chain of moves they do where Sub-Zero goes, he catches Scorpion's foot and Scorpion goes to kick over him.
Yep.
And he
misses.
And he misses because Sub-Zero dodges. Then he immediately, as soon as he comes back from it, he
pops off the ground with another roundhouse. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, while he's still got a hold of his first, you know, that first foot. And it's like,
you could tell it's just like these two guys. He's like, all right, let's do this. Let's do this. Can you do this? Yeah, let's do
that. Just calling spots as they're doing. Yeah. Just roll the camera. We're going to do a thing.
That's what happened on set for when I was doing like that one movie that I did where I could kind of control like how the fight was going to go, you know, and like the director was really experienced and stuff like that. But I was like, I know what I can do.
Yeah.
And I know what my scene partner can do. We were two kind of more experienced martial artists. So we're just like, all right, let's just do this. And we suggested, you know, like we basically just did whatever we wanted.
Yeah.
And we're just like, if that looks good, keep it. If it doesn't look good, just do what you want to do to the director. And like, well, we did look good. So he was just like, oh yeah, we're definitely doing that. So I'm thinking that's what happened with like Robin Shu. It was just like, to the people who didn't know what they were doing, he'd come and help out. But like with two people who knew what they were doing, he probably was less kind of influential on how that fight
scene. Well, and I guess that would make sense why you see in some of those scenes, the way the fights go, like the choreography goes, it's like, this is very different looking
than that fight scene. Definitely. Yeah. I think like the common denominator between those two really good fight scenes is that actor that plays both Cyrax and Scorpion. It's the same actor. They clearly had a dearth of talent because that same guy does does both.
Who else in this movie actually is a martial artist besides, I mean, you got Robin Shu.
Right. Robin Shu, like,
are any of the other people?
That's the thing. Robin Shu doesn't really do that many martial arts films. Like, he's known for Mortal Kombat and Mortal Kombat Annihilation. That's pretty much all he did. You know, he's not like, I read his bio a while back and it was like, because I just wanted to get to know him. Like, there aren't a lot of Asian actors, and I wanted to get to know about him a little bit.
Yeah,
and it's like he got into martial arts like really late, like, and he pretty much like had a little bit of experience before he started Mortal Kombat.
The first Mortal Kombat?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's amazing. It's kind of incredible that then he would get that gig.
Right, yeah. He got it over some more experienced martial artists, like people that are like kind of well-known stuntmen.
And when you would think that like, oh, okay, so maybe it's due to his acting abilities, but it's like...
No.
Right. I mean, you go like, is it?
Yeah.
Like, how bad were the other guys?
Yeah. Well, I guess he got really lucky because apparently Jason Scott Lee, who played Bruce Lee in that dragon movie.
Also played Mowgli.
Also played Mowgli in the Jungle Book. I think Simon or Philip Rhee, from Best of the Best. You ever seen that movie?
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Yes. Is yeah. he, what's his name from?
Dehan and the main character.
Yeah.
From Best of the Best, like the bad guy and the good guy, they're brothers. So I don't remember which one of them went out for that part, but they both would have been great.
Man. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, side story.
Oh yeah. By all means.
Dehan, who plays the bad guy in Best of the Best, is a Taekwondo master. Well, they both are, but, Dehan.
Well, and the they're both that, great in Best of the Best.
And they're like, awesome. Yeah.
Why wouldn't you get one of them?
Yeah. And like, he's the one with the eye patch and he's awesome, but he's a Taekwondo master.
And I can totally see the guy who plays what is his name? What's the good brother's name?
I keep forgetting.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
It's Simon and Phil. Philip is the good guy. Simon, I think, is Dehan.
Okay. But well, it's like he looks like he could he would make a perfect Liu Kang.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
But he owns a martial arts. He owns a Taekwondo school in California.
Right.
I think it's like in Southern California somewhere. And one of my students, back when I taught at Brown University, I teach at the Taekwondo club at Brown University, and they go home for the summer, obviously, so they can't train with us.
Yeah.
So during the summer, we encourage them, if they want to keep training in Taekwondo, they like find a local school and like send us the link, and we'll see like if it's like a school that kind of like is applicable to what we do, or if it's a completely different style of Taekwondo.
Because as you told me this over the course of this weekend,
there's a lot of different styles of Taekwondo. Yeah,
you're like, oh, that's like that thing when you were explaining the differences in the like federations.
Yeah,
I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah, there's a lot of different styles. So like if it's our style, then we'll give you the go ahead to go train there, and to mark it down as like, you trained over the summer.
Right.
And give you credit for those classes, maybe, And one of our students, Andy, went back home to California, and he sent us a link. My master and I sent my master and I a link to the school. It's like, is this school like acceptable? And like, we clicked on it, and it's Dehan's Taekwondo school. And Master Park, who is my master Park and I, like, we love that movie so much. We watch it every year, and we force our students to watch it before like the big competition at the end of the year. We watch it every year to the point where like the entire club is just sick of that movie and sick of us liking that movie so much. And so we flipped out. We were like, that's Dehan school. You have to go and tell us how it is. You have to go.
Well, how was it? Did you find out?
I don't think he ever went.
Oh,
I'm so disappointed. I want to go. I want to go and train with him. Oh man.
Well, man, that's a fun little foray into, man, I'm just like that movie.
Yeah, gang, if you're listening to this podcast and you want to watch a good bad movie.
Yeah,
that movie is Best of the Best.
Best of the Best is awesome.
It has Eric Roberts in it.
Oh my God. It has Eric Roberts in it. It has Chris Penn in it.
Yep.
It has James Earl Jones in it.
Talk about people who don't know martial arts.
Yikes. Oh my God. Yeah.
Yikes. Eric Roberts trying to do karate. Yikes.
Who's worse in that movie trying to do martial arts, Eric Roberts or Chris Penn?
Well, Chris Penn's character, it's kind of like, it's hard because Chris Penn's character, he plays Cowboy.
Yeah.
And Chris Penn's character in Cowboy, like Cowboy is like, he's just kind of a dirty fighter.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have to make it look like he knows martial arts. He just has to take a cheap shot after.
But you have to go like, well, how is he going to make it to this level of competition?
Just being a cheap shot artist.
Yeah, just being a...
Yeah, Eric Roberts is definitely rougher because they make him out to be like this extremely really talented traditional martial arts fighter. And like, he doesn't look like he can move well at all. Especially when you put Simon and Philip Reed next to him.
That's funny. So it's funny that you say that because in my recollection of this movie, based on like, now I've seen this movie more recently than when I was a kid, but it's like, it is still so filtered through the lens that I saw it, like watching that, watching that videotape we rented from the grocery store where it's like this, like me and my friends, like, having like a what do you, not a sleepover. That's not what we called it when we were little kids.
Slumber party?
No, that sounds even worse. that is what it is, but it's just, I feel like we had some other name for it when your friends were going to come hang out and stay over. not important. But it's just like, I can't, we must have rented that movie like so, I don't even know how many times, because it would just be like, you'd go to the video store on like Friday night, you know, with one of your friends or with like a couple of your friends, and it's like, oh, they're out of this. Like, oh, we've already seen this. But it's like, oh, let's get Best of the Best again. And it's like, we saw that movie so many times. And, you know, of course, it also used to just come on cable, like randomly, you know, back. But I thought Eric Roberts was so awesome in that movie.
Yeah.
Like, he's got that long hair. It's like,
he looks just good.
He looks so cool. Like,
he's jacked. He looks good.
Yeah. But it's like, my recollection of that is that, oh, yeah, he did a great job. Yeah. His fight choreography, you know, was like, as a kid, I probably just thought, oh, he really can do this.
Yeah. I mean, they make him look good. It's just to me, I can
tell. Oh, yeah.
But to like the average person, he looks fine. Okay. He doesn't look bad at all.
Oh, no, of course. I'm going to go back and watch it now that you've like opened my eyes about it and just be like, ooh.
I don't want to insult Eric Roberts.
He's not a martial artist.
He's fine.
He's a fine actor, but he's not a martial artist. I mean, it's no insult to say that. Oh, man, when I say he's a fine actor, though. April and I started watching this movie, and it was called something like Cowboys versus Dinosaurs.
Oh, yeah.
It came out like, you know, it was like one of these like knockoff.
Oh, how
you know,
far Eric Roberts has fallen.
Asylum movies. Yeah, and he's in that play, and this like drunk dad, like not just drunk, I mean like raging alcoholic dad to the main guy in the movie. Yeah. And it's like, it's clear they had him for a day, but they were like, oh, we got a real movie star in this. You know, we got a real actor in this. Oh, and it's so embarrassing and so sad.
Yeah, I feel bad for Eric Roberts. He used to be, you know, he used to be the man. Like, he's the reason Julia Roberts is famous.
Yeah, because she was
his younger sister for like a while. Now everyone's just like, who the heck is Eric Roberts?
Now he's Julia Roberts' brother. And more importantly, now he's Emma Roberts' dad.
Father, yeah.
Yeah. everyone should go get a hold of Best of the Best, though.
Yeah.
Man, we should. Oh, now we got to do an episode about that. I love that Best of the Best has got James Earl Jones's best no ever. No. That no he does in that, it's like better than the one he does at the end of Revenge of the Sith.
That's the no. That's the no he's trying to use to convince someone not to kill someone in the ring. His way of stopping is just goes the, no.
It's like the sound drops out and it's like you can hear just that little bit of like tense music in the background where he's got a hold of that guy, like and he's about to get him. He's like, you can't see me, but I'm like shaking my head like James Earl Jones, real like sort of not emphatically, but just like a real like.
It's a very stoic no.
Yeah, no. But he's got that voice and it sounds so loud because everything else drops out of the movie.
But it's such a weird scene too, because you would think he'd be more like emphatic and kind of like.
You think in the moment of
more sense of urgency.
Yeah, he's about to kill somebody. It's like, but he's playing it like. The scene is happening sort of in slow motion.
Yep.
And he plays it like it's happening in slow motion. Oh, man. Anyway, nothing to do with Mortal Kombat, but everyone, go see that movie.
Yeah, and keep in mind that whenever they say karate, they really mean taekwondo. And that movie, the only thing that irritates me more than anything in that movie is that they keep calling it karate, and it's not karate.
Do you think that was one of those things where just at that point in America's... because, you know, in like the mid to late 80s,
absolutely. That still happens today where they like Americans kind of like, oh, not all Americans, obviously, but like for a while, they just like everything was karate.
Yeah.
Karate was just synonymous.
Does he actually do karate in The Karate Kid?
Well, they don't really do much of any kind of real martial arts in karate.
Okay. The
crane kick is a kung fu move.
Okay.
So that tells you what level of knowledge of martial arts everyone has. And Mr. Miyagi, Pat Morita, doesn't know any martial arts.
Yeah, yeah.
Karate to a lot of folks was just like synonymous with martial arts.
Right.
And that's like, you know, like everything is karate. Like, oh, what kind of karate do you do?
Yeah.
I do taekwondo. Oh, that's an interesting type of karate. It's like, no, that's different.
Yeah.
But that comes from this whole history of like martial arts being introduced in America, like after World War II, and people realized like Japan exists. And the first martial arts they encountered was this weird Japanese martial art called karate. And then everything from then on was just karate. Yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, you know, just with that, the you know, sort of there was that huge resurgence of, you know, of martial arts thanks to The Karate Kid and stuff like that. You know, and then everything was kind of trying to cash in on that. And I was like, okay, so maybe that's why they were specifically like really wanting to call it karate in there. But yeah, that makes total sense as well. It's just that everything was karate.
Yeah.
When did that change? When did it start getting broken off into like where people know the difference?
It's just like just from time and like people like becoming more worldly.
Right.
The internet helps like people realizing that there's more information out there than just like, oh, this is all karate. It's like, no, there's like a million types of martial arts.
Yeah.
And like people starting to realize like things go in like different parts for like contacts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Cause like, I think like martial arts movies, if you trace it back in like in America, martial arts movies, you have to trace it back to Bruce Lee. Like first kind of like real, like American, martial arts superstar. And he did Kung Fu, and like Bruce Lee was actually very vocal about like differentiating like karate from Kung Fu and all the other different martial arts that are out there. But like most people didn't get that message. They were just mostly just in awe of how great Bruce Lee was. And then when he died, you know, it was like, I think like the martial arts movies in the 80s have as much to do with Bruce Lee's popularity as like as Rocky. Cause like Rocky was like, it clearly like established this formula of like the underdog. And then there's a training montage that's very inspirational.
Yeah.
Then the hero comes back and they like, you know,
speaking of montages, this is like another thing that's so great about, Best of the Best is the fact that it's like, they have the whole time it's leading up to this fight between the US team, which are supposed to be the good guys versus the, where are they from?
I think it's the Korean team.
Is it? Yeah, I was going to say, I was like, I think it's
That's Korean, why it's weird that they call it karate, because it's Korean. They're clearly doing taekwondo. It's from Korea.
You've got them. But it's giving you montages of both of them training for this thing. And I assume, because that came out after Rocky IV, right? I think Best of the Best came out.
Because,
Of course, Best of the Best has got that. I mean, Rocky IV has got that famous double montage going of Rocky's training and how Ivan Drago's training. Mm-hmm. And it's like juxtaposing the differences in their training. Right. And this is doing that same thing, but it's like the way that it shows that training happening, every bit of it seems like the Korean team should be the good guys.
Right.
Because they're like working together as a team. They're working really hard. It shows that they're like really training, you know, well, they're training hard. Right. And it's like the American team, so much of their montage is showing like how they don't get along, how they're like just goofing around on their training. They're just like,
they're going out to a bar.
Yeah. That scene where, you know, it's like, they're supposed to be jumping rope and like one of the guys is doing it. And like the rest of them are like, oh, I'm not doing this. Or like, oh, this is, I can't get it right. You know, and stuff like this. And you're just going like, and then you cut to the quote unquote bad guys.
They're super disciplined.
Yeah, they're super disciplined. They're doing stuff like all perfect. And they're doing stuff that's the thing too, is like they're doing training things that are really hard.
Yeah.
And it's like you cut to the American team and they're like, oh, I can't hit this back. Yeah, they're just screwing around. Like they're fighting about ice cream or something. Yeah. You know, and it's just like, these guys deserve to win. Clearly they're trying. They're working so hard.
Yeah.
You guys are, anyway. So back to Mortal Kombat. No, but so you were talking about Bruce Lee having as much to do with
as Rocky does, because like that formula works really well for martial arts movies, because like especially when you're trying to show like the good guys working really hard and,
or not,
it's a really entertaining formula. I mean, I still like watching it.
Yeah.
They still use it for movies and I'm still game. Every time
you do it,
every
it's
time
like,
they do it, it works.
If you do it right, it works.
And like, I think that's like, what's so another weird thing about Mortal Kombat Annihilation is that like there is no point where they all, like they don't earn that part where they come together.
Right.
It's not earned at all. Like they go from one to the, like one thing to the next thing.
Now we're here.
Yeah.
Now here's the ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no up and down structure to this story.
And they even set it up like Liu Kang is going to have a whole set of things that he learns. Cause they're like, oh, you got to pass the Night Wolves. Oh, guys, one of the best things that happened while we were watching this was I wish we had just been recording like a commentary the whole time. So while we're watching this, the scene where Nightwolf shows up and they're having that little back and forth, and the Nightwolf says some line and Randy just goes, "He's in a different movie." And I was just like, that cracked me up so hard because it was like, yes, that's exactly what the problem here is. Nightwolf is so in a different movie. Oh, man.
Is it jumps from one type of movie to another really fast. And also, like, the way that guy acts
is
so weirdly over the top.
Well, every time I see him, it's like, and they do that one scene where they hold on it, that one part where they hold on his face for too long. Yeah. Like, it's clearly there's a break. It looks like he kind of has, like, a little bit of a pause in there, like, where you would expect them to cut back to Liu Kang. Mm-hmm. But they don't. And so it looks like they were shooting it like coverage, you know, where he's saying the line and you expect it. But it just like when that happens, every time I see that part and it looks like it, he's got that weird pause and like he's thinking about what he's supposed to say next. I just like big in my mind flashes, not an actor. Yeah.
Again, the director is supposed to know.
Yeah.
When that happens, cut away. Go to a different shot.
Oh, and after that happened, when we were watching it, I was like, that was the best take we got.
Oh, they didn't want to do another one.
But they set it up like Liu Kang is going to have this like, oh, here's going to be the things where he really learns what's happening. Because right. It's like, you've got to pass three tests to whatever. And it's like, you get the thing where it's like, okay, he has that weird dream. And maybe that's the first test. It's like some kind of test of self-doubt or something, maybe. And then the second test is Jade showing up, which is like some kind of test of purity and
fidelity,
faithfulness or something. Yeah, like, but she was sent by Shao Kahn as a trick, like as a to lure him into this trap. So it's like, was that part of Nightwolf's plan?
Makes no sense.
Did he know any about that? Also, where did Nightwolf go for the rest of the movie?
Yeah. He seems really powerful. Maybe he could help.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like he's a big deal. You'd seem like he maybe when all this stuff, you could like hand wave it with go like, oh, yeah, the reason we never see Scorpion and Sub-Zero again is because, oh, they're off doing something else. Same deal with Nightwolf. He's dealing with other stuff. But it's like, don't bring these characters into the movie then if they're like people, you know, they're characters.
That's the thing too, is that like you said, you don't know that much about like Mortal Kombat, like as a franchise.
I mean, I know some, but it's like, I'm definitely no, like, I don't know as much about it as I know about Street Fighter.
The story in Mortal Kombat is like there's been like 14 Mortal Kombat games. So like the story there is pretty deep. There's a lot to be drawn from that, and they don't.
Oh, and I know about how there's all that like history between Scorpion and Sub-Zero.
Right. There's a lot of story that goes into Mortal Kombat, and they don't use any of it. like that's the thing too, is that like John Tobias, who's one of the creators of Mortal Kombat, and he's credited as one of the writers in this movie, and this has no semblance of what goes on in the games.
I don't buy
games.
That at all. The I feel story, like that's one of those.
Yeah,
like,
it's just like include me.
You have to have his name in the credits. Right.
But this is the thing, is that like in the video games,
he was like the bad guy for this should be Shao Kahn.
Right. Yeah. Like the story in the Mortal Kombat games, even though it's very shallow, is way better than this. like this, the storylines that go through the first two games, even
the first one. It's like in the first movie, it's like it's a tournament. Yeah. All right. That's all you need.
I'm good with that.
Like you could have had the second one just be another tournament. Mm-hmm. Like find some excuse for another tournament.
Oh, that's the thing. They keep telling you this is another Mortal Kombat type of deal. Like this is like the first Mortal Kombat. It's just the stakes are higher, but it has no semblance of like being the same thing at all. And so like when we're just being told that it's the same thing and it's higher stakes, but we don't see any of that.
Yeah. Well, and just to, I was like, oh, this is the other, like you never see a third thing for Liu Kang's third test. And you could say that it's like, and it's like, he has to learn these three things. And you could say that it's like, oh, maybe something that happens along, like learning to believe in himself as a leader, even though like you can, it definitely feels like because they have that part where he's having those flashbacks, you know, of like, yeah.
Don't do the work for the writers.
Yeah.
We're doing a lot of the work for the writers.
Watch this movie 202 times, man. It's like,
you've already spent more time on it than they have.
I think after the third night, I'd spent more time on it than they have. All right, everybody, we got to wrap it up there because Randy and I kept talking for a very, very long time. And, you know, even though that episode is pretty old, like when we recorded it, I was on episode 202, or not episode, I was on watching Mortal Kombat Night 202. And now here I am in the 300s. So it's taken me that long, which, sorry, Randy, if you were really looking forward to listening to this in a much timelier manner. But hey, you lived through it, so and you guys didn't even know we had recorded it, so you weren't missing it yet. But that's just how things go. And that's fine. The stuff that's happened in between with the other episodes, those were kind of more timely. And, you know, whatever. I'm not even going to worry about it. And you shouldn't either. Let's just have fun with this thing. So I hope this I started to say issue. I've got comics on the brain, I guess. It happens, you know. It happens. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you can tell that I've been sick, because to me it certainly sounds like my voice is at a much lower register than normal, and hopefully that'll come across to you guys as it rattles through the bass in your car speakers that shake your whole car. Or maybe not. Look, I don't know, guys. But thanks for listening. The next episode will be more with Randy. Things are all the wheels are starting to turn to get everything back on the normal schedule, which is great, and I'm certainly happy about it, and I hope you're happy about it too. What do I normally say at the end? Well, I tell you that you can follow me on Twitter at @TheChrisHaley. You can follow the show on Twitter at @KICTMPodcast. You can go to the website, keepitclosetome.com, and check out all the links and such. Definitely we'll put the video for the first episode of WMAC Masters in there, because that's something you should definitely check out. And if you don't want to go try to find it on YouTube yourself, I'm going to put it in there for you. Unless they have taken it down between now and when Randy and I watched it, because that was quite a while ago. And goodness, what else? What else has been going on that I should tell you guys about? I've got a t-shirt up on teepublic.com/thechrishaley. I think that's what it is. I'll put a link in there. It says Punch More Nazis. It's been successful beyond my wildest dreams. And I think that is mostly due to the fact is that I am donating money from it to Planned Parenthood and the ACLU. So if you want to check that out, I'll put the link in there. And just, you know, support general goodness, you can do that. What else? I haven't done this in a while. Just want to thank all of the people that are supporters of the show on Patreon, which if you're not, you can go to patreon.com/thechrishaley and support the show, and for as little as $1 a month, and you get access to early episodes of the show and behind the scenes stuff. But then there's higher levels you can go to if you want and get cool stuff in the mail, stickers and art and CDs and all kinds of things. Special surprises, depending on what ideas come to me as I'm putting together everyone's packages. But I just want to thank everybody that has supported the show on Patreon, and I will do that in order now. I want to thank Jason Doring, Dara Emery, Sean Hutchison, Lakeith Lewis, Lauren Ng, Dan Forster, Brandon Medley, Sydney Taylor B, Sean Anderson, Luke Hare, Reed Armour, Scott Barrios, L. Collins, Matt Smith, Zachary Cavini, Daniel Feltz, Mike Norton, Joe Zaniga, Just Haley, Jeff Stoliark, Ming Doyle, Stephen Garza, sorry, I tripped over my tongue there, David Looney, Curtis Franklin, who you may know as Kurt Franklin, but it cracks me up that he entered his name as Curtis Franklin. that really caught me off guard. Matt Sweeney, Adam P. Nave, James Leach, and Pedro Picure. If I mispronounce your name, I'm sorry. And hey, you can email me at kictmpodcast@gmail.com if you want to make sure I pronounce your name right and give me like the phonetic spelling of how I should say it, or maybe rhyme it with something that is easy for me to, in case the phonetic spelling is too complicated for me. I mean, I only studied English, so I should know how to do phonetic spelling. So, but hey, maybe doing it as a rhyme is easier for you. So whatever works for you, or if you like hearing me mispronounce your name, if you think that's funny, go for it. Don't email me and tell me that I'm completely messing it up. But please don't take offense if I did mispronounce anybody's name, especially Curtis Franklin. But anyway, guys, that's enough about Kurt. Maybe he'll be on the show again soon. It was certainly fun talking to him. It's always fun when I get to have these people that I've been friends with for a while, like him or Randy. Certainly I've been friends with Kurt a little longer, but it's fun when I get to have like people that I really have a good time talking to on the show. And I'm very lucky that the people that I have talked to so far, the people that I've called upon to be on the show, have all been a lot of fun for me to talk to. And hopefully a lot of fun for you to listen to. That seems like a bunch of good stuff to tell you guys. If you want to tell a friend about the show, that would be super cool. Just like if you've got a friend that you're like, hey, I heard you were looking for some new podcast, maybe why don't you give this one a listen. This guy that does it said my name wrong. It's funny. Let's laugh at how he got my name wrong. And also, you like Mortal Kombat, right? Listen to this podcast. Thank you to everyone who's left a review on iTunes. If you haven't yet, feel free to go and do that. It helps the show out as much as, maybe not as much as like telling a friend, like really forcing a friend to listen to it, but it helps in sort of a broaderal? Oh, Chris, that's not even a word. That's not even close to a word. I think I put broad and general together, and that did not go well. That was an unsuccessful portmanteau of those two words. But you get the idea. It helps out. You know, the last thing I wanted to say was, you guys heard, since this episode was recorded quite a while ago, you heard another little cameo from our dear, sweet, departed Roxy. And it was fun to get to hear her little voice there in the back. And I hope that she makes some more surprise appearances in some of the things I've got recorded. We sure miss you. We sure miss you, little Roxy. April and I sure miss you. So it was nice to hear from you. So guys, before I get all sappy and emotional again, before that happens, I'll just say, you know, be excellent to each other. And remember, be there for one another. You're a family now. Edit that out.